Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests for you. In the first half, we are going to speak with Dr. Stephanie Rubino, and we're going to talk about eating to control blood sugar. And in the second half, we're going to have Chanchal Cabrera, and she's a medical herbalist helping us decide therapies if we're ever diagnosed with cancer. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
People tend to be optimistic for most of their life, even when they have to cope with serious challenges, a new study finds. Researchers surveyed 75,000 people aged 16 to 101 in the United States, Germany, and the Netherlands to assess their optimism and outlook about the future. Study author William Chopik said, "We found that optimism continued to increase throughout young adulthood, seemed to steadily plateau, and then decline into older adulthood." He is an assistant professor of psychology at Michigan State University. Counterintuitively, and most surprising, he added, "We found that really hard things like deaths and divorces really didn't change a person's outlook to the future." The study was published online recently in the Journal of Research in Personality. Aging baby boomers may not be as mentally sharp as their parents were, a new study suggests, raising questions about what the pattern could mean for future dementia rates. Looking at two decades' worth of data on U.S. adults, the study found generational differences in tests of cognitive function. That refers to essential mental abilities such as remembering, reasoning, and problem-solving. On average, Americans born in the early to mid-boomer generation, between 1948 and 1959, fared a bit worse on those tests than previous generations. The pattern reversed what had been an improving outlook. Americans born between 1942 and 1947 had generally outperformed those born between 1890 and 1923. The study, recently published online in Journals in Gerontology, Social Sciences, pulled data from a long-running health study of Americans older than 50. No singular thing will stop the spread of the coronavirus, the World Health Organization's director general said recently. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus told reporters, "There's no silver bullet at the moment, and there might never be." The WHO declared the corona pandemic a global health emergency more than 6 months ago. At that time, fewer than 100 cases had been reported across the world. Now more than 18 million cases and nearly 700,000 deaths have been recorded, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Ghebreyesus said, "For now, stopping outbreaks comes down to the basics of public health and disease control, testing, isolating, and treating patients, and tracing and quarantining their contacts. Do it all." Although several vaccine candidates have entered late-stage clinical trials, widespread vaccine distribution likely won't occur for some time, he said. If you're younger than 65 and obese, COVID-19 poses a special danger to you. A new study reports that the more obese you are, the more likely you are to either die from infection with the new coronavirus or require life-saving mechanical ventilation to survive. Morbidly obese COVID-19 patients are 60% more likely to die or require intubation compared with people of normal weight, researchers found. Patients who were mildly obese were 10% more likely to die or need a breathing machine, while those who were moderately obese were 30% more likely, according to the study. The findings were published July 29th in the Annals of Internal Medicine.
Well, thanks, Alan, for that Health First News. We have Stephanie Rubino with us now, and she's a naturopathic physician. We've got lots of questions for you on how to eat to control blood sugar. So welcome, Stephanie.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you here. Can you explain to us a little bit about what blood sugar is, how to understand blood sugar in the first place?
Of course. So blood sugar, or another name for sugar, is glucose, is actually the main sugar found in our blood. And we generally get glucose mostly from the foods that we eat each day, although our body can make glucose as well. And we generally rely on glucose as a source of energy. And there's a few organs that we have, such as our pancreas, small intestine, and liver, that actually help us absorb, store, and produce glucose.
So when our bodies are functioning well, we don't even notice all that going on. How does our body actually handle the glucose?
So glucose balance really depends on the function of two hormones that are actually produced by the pancreas. And those two hormones are insulin and glucagon. So basically, when we eat, our stomach digests the food, and in particular, our carbohydrates that we have been eating get broken down into glucose or sugar. Our stomach and small intestine absorb that glucose, and then it gets released into the bloodstream. And in response, our pancreas, and in particular, our beta cells from the pancreas, will start to release insulin. And when it does that, that actually helps bring glucose into our cells. So it could be used as energy, or it might be stored for later use. So the insulin really works to help keep glucose levels balanced in the blood. On the other side of that, we have glucagon, which helps in terms of providing glucose if the body needs it. And so glucagon will help in terms of the breakdown of something called glycogen, which is our storage form of glucose. And so it will help to break down that glycogen. So the body gets glucose in case we go into a low blood sugar state or hypoglycemia state.
Protection. The body works to balance the blood sugar levels. What's considered a normal blood sugar level?
Yep. So typically we can get our blood sugar tested through a blood test. In Canada, blood sugar levels are measured in millimoles per liter. So there's a few target ranges that we're looking at. If we're getting tested for our fasting blood sugar level, this is our blood sugar number before a meal, or if we fasted for 12 hours. That typically ranges from 4 to 7 millimoles per liter, ideal being more in the 4 to 6 range. We can also look at our after-meal blood sugar level. That's typically taken about 2 hours after we've eaten, and that might range between 5 to 10 millimoles per liter. And especially diabetics, they often get tested for their hemoglobin A1C levels. This is a test that measures the amount of blood sugar that attaches to our hemoglobin, which is found in our red blood cells. And this really helps to evaluate how controlled our blood sugar levels have been over the last 3 months. And the goal for this test is to have a value of about 7% or less.
Interesting. So what happens when your blood sugar isn't balanced or regulated?
So I think most people can probably find this throughout the day that their blood sugar may go up and down. So going into a low blood sugar state known as hypoglycemia or a high blood sugar state known as hyperglycemia is actually quite common, and actually swinging back and forth between the two states. Unfortunately, you know, we're not made for that, right? And we want to see more regulation of blood sugar levels throughout the day. If that does not happen, we can sort of go into a situation known as insulin resistance. This really refers to when the pancreas can't make insulin or can't use insulin properly in the body in response to the high blood sugar level. So our cells, you know, found in our muscles and body fat and liver start resisting insulin and ignoring the signal from this really important hormone. And basically the body starts producing more insulin in order to cope. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the pancreas gets tired, the beta cells get tired, they can't keep up with that pace. And over the long term, what we see is the emergence of prediabetes, type 2 diabetes, and even metabolic syndrome, which is a condition where individuals present with increased blood pressure, high blood sugar, you know, belly fat, high triglycerides and cholesterol, and that, of course, will increase our risk for heart disease and stroke and type 2 diabetes.
Hmm. Wow, Stephanie, that's a lot. So how would we help our bodies to manage the blood sugar? Is there some supplementation that we could use for blood sugar control?
There's a variety of supplements, and of course, dietary measures are definitely important. You know, when it comes to supplements, We know that there are certain deficiencies in specific nutrients, such as magnesium and vitamin D, that correlate with having higher blood sugar levels and concern with insulin function. There's definitely research looking at other nutrients, such as alpha-lipoic acid and chromium, helping to lower blood sugar and improve insulin resistance. And there's so many amazing botanicals, curcumin and cinnamon, berberis, just so many that help, again, in terms of regulating blood sugar levels and improving insulin function.
Now, if you're on pharmaceuticals, is it still okay to work with these herbs and vitamins, or is there some challenges with that?
Yes, and that, of course, we want to make sure people are working with their healthcare provider and they're being, honest in terms of what they are taking. When you start to improve blood sugar levels and insulin function, there may be adjustments needed in medication. So definitely be aware of that. Oftentimes, people are testing their blood sugar levels daily. Mm-hmm. And that's a great indicator of what's taking place. But really be mindful that when you do start introducing some of these natural health products, that can improve your blood sugar level and your insulin function, and that may impact the way your medication is working. So definitely keep an eye on that and speak to your healthcare provider.
Okay. Stephanie, what role does exercise play in regulating? What happens with the blood sugar when we get out for a walk or a swim?
Yep, so exercise is fantastic in terms of helping to regulate blood sugar levels. In particular, it helps to, lower blood sugar levels, especially short-term exercise really helps the cells in our muscles take up more glucose to be used as energy and for tissue repair. Of course, that will help to lower blood sugar levels. And long-term, we find long-term exercise will help the cells be more responsive to insulin and prevent resistance. So daily movement, you don't have to be hitting the weights in the gym. Oftentimes, walking is really key, especially after meals. Swimming, fantastic. Just any type of movement that you enjoy that allows you to be active for about 30 to 60 minutes most days of the week.
So if I'm going to have, a sweet or an ice cream or something, is it going to really benefit me to just get out there and go for a walk right after it as far as bringing sugar back into balance?
Well, you make sure you're moving after that, even after some of our meals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially some of our bigger meals, just getting out and moving instead of staying stationary really helps in terms of improving our metabolism and regulating our blood sugar levels.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain time of day, say after meals, would it be most important to do after supper or after breakfast? Or how much exercise or how much movement should we get in a day to help our blood sugar?
Yeah, I think, if we can aim for at least 30 minutes per day, that I think is a great goal for many people.
Mm-hmm.
Time of day really depends on individual schedule. Some people find benefit mostly in the morning, other people in the evening. So really depends on your own particular habits and lifestyle.
Okay. And stress, when we think of lifestyle, what role does stress play in our blood sugar levels?
Yep. So stress, we know, secretes some of our stress hormones, especially cortisol, and excessive stress can cause blood sugar levels to rise because there is an increase of cortisol. When we are under stress, that definitely increases the cravings for more comfort foods. So a lot of our refined sugars and carbohydrates tend to be consumed a little bit more. And of course, that will definitely, lead to higher blood sugar levels. Oftentimes with, chronic stress that's interfering with sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So that will also play a role in blood sugar regulation. So there's been a number of studies that have found that natural stress relievers, so including exercise, like we mentioned, yoga, meditation, can be really helpful for regulating blood sugar levels and helping diabetics and those with insulin resistance. in terms of, you know, again, lowering blood sugar levels and keeping them balanced and getting outside. Definitely a great time of year to get the benefits of being outdoors and get moving.
Oh, good hints. Where there's lots so much we could do. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about ways to control our blood sugar.